We're talking with Lincoln historian Christian McWhorter here, and I'm going to move on in our conversation from where we started. There was a press conference just in the past hour this morning about a letter written by Abraham Lincoln. Can you tell us what was in that? What is that about?
Yeah, one of the really coolest things about working in an institution like this is we're always getting new stuff. And especially when they're a donation, it's especially, you know, wonderful. And we got a new Lincoln letter today. New in that it's a letter that we knew about, but it was out there in the world in private hands. Now it's been donated to us by a Lincoln scholar and collector named Guy Fraker, who's one of a really close friend and ally of this institution. And it's a really cool letter. It's short, but it's packed with context. It's Abraham Lincoln in November of 1854. This is a really critical period for Abraham Lincoln when the Kansas-Nebraska Act has just passed. And there's a lot of conflict going on. His Whig Party is collapsing. The Republican Party is emerging. And Abraham Lincoln is deciding what he wants to do. And he's been elected to the Illinois House of Representatives. And he's actually declining that victory because he wants to run for Senate. And he can't do that if he's in the House. And we know, of course, that 4 years later, he'll run for Senate against Stephen Douglas in the famous campaign that leads to the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
One of the things that I think is so interesting about this is it shows Lincoln as a political strategist, right? Him as this great hero, this great self-taught scholar. But he was really into the sort of nitty-gritty of politics.
I tried to make that same point at the press conference. You just made it so much better than I did and so much more concisely. That's why I don't work in radio, I guess. Absolutely. It's a really fascinating letter because the narrative on Lincoln for the longest time was that in the 1850s, really up until he runs against Douglas in 1858, that he kind of steps back from politics because he doesn't really run. He doesn't really, he's not out there campaigning very much. But when we look at his letters closely, you can see that Lincoln, even when he's not out there actively campaigning, he's a mover and a shaker. He's a very prominent person in the emerging Illinois Republican Party, and then he becomes one in the National Republican Party. And so absolutely, Lincoln is a behind the scenes politician, rolling his sleeves up, getting dirty, doing political work.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Christian McWhorter, Lincoln historian here at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. Christian, one of the other things I want to ask you about is Lincoln has really come in for a reappraisal in the last year, especially. We've seen his name taken off schools. There was a move at the University of Wisconsin by some student groups there to remove a statue of him. Can you talk about, Lincoln's evolving views on race, how that could be used as a lesson? I know you've talked to some teachers about how his sort of journey on race can be used as part of a lesson plan for students today.
Yeah, we did a workshop for teachers earlier this week that our education director, Heather Nice, organized, and it was I was privileged to be a part of that and to be able to talk to these teachers, and we did documents. Lincoln. People have been arguing about Lincoln's racial views, ever since he got elected president and maybe even before that. And the way we try to get across to teachers is to show them actual documents, have them read Lincoln's actual words on issues, particularly in this case, issues like African Americans and slavery, right? What were Lincoln's actual opinions on slavery? What was motivating? Lincoln said he was anti-slavery most of his life. What was motivating Lincoln to be anti-slavery? Did that mean that Lincoln believed in racial equality? Did those opinions change over time? Those are the kind of questions you can kind of ask by looking at Lincoln's words directly. And that guide for teachers is actually available on our website. If you go to our website and you open up the panel for the Education Department, you'll see that there's a few teaching guides on there. And one of them is about Lincoln's evolving views on race.
All right, we did get a caller from one of our listeners. Because of our technical challenges, we're not going to put it live on air. But Anne in East Peoria, thank you for calling. Her question was, we hear a lot about the Civil War, but what was happening in the rest of the world when Lincoln was president during the Civil War?
Oh, well, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I can tell you what Lincoln's answer would have been. Lincoln, the rest of the world is, the 19th century is a tumultuous century. And so just focusing on Europe, these European monarchies that have been around for a long time are struggling in the 19th century. This is when democracy is emerging in Europe as well. And Lincoln is very aware of that. Lincoln sees the United States as the last best hope of earth, right? He says that during the Civil War. We're the beacon of democracy for the rest of the world. If America collapses during the Civil War, what is that going to do for all these other democratic movements that are going on elsewhere? Of course, the other point I should make too is Lincoln also has an oppositional relationship with some of these countries. During the Civil War, the one thing Lincoln absolutely does not want to have happen is what happened during the American Revolution, where one of the reasons that the Americans, the colonists, succeed in the American Revolution is an alliance with France. Lincoln doesn't want the Confederates in the Civil War to have an alliance with either France or Great Britain. So that's also going on. Diplomacy, you know, is always complicated, and it was back then, too.
All right, listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are broadcasting live from the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. We're speaking with Lincoln historian Christian McWhorter here. He is the author of a book on the music of the Civil War. And in just a few minutes on the program, we're going to be hearing an interview I recorded earlier this week touring the new State of Sound exhibit here. And Christian, I want to spend the rest of our time today talking about music. This is an area of your scholarship. Can you draw a pathway for us from Civil War through the Great Migration up to the Civil Rights Movement? Illinois has this rich musical history. Can you connect those dots for us?
Sure. I mean, the music, and it's hard to, obviously I want to talk, there's so many things I want to talk about here, right? So let's start though with the Civil War. Illinois is an emerging state by the time we get to the Civil War. You know, Chicago has really only just come into its own. And one of the things that happens during the Civil War is Chicago emerges as a center for the music industry. The music industry in the 19th century, of course, isn't centered around vinyl or CDs or MP3s. It's centered around sheet music, right? You have these music stores that are selling sheet music that people can take home and play in instruments in their home. They're selling instruments in these stores, and they're also publishing songs. And during the Civil War, Chicago kind of puts down its flag by several really prominent Civil War songs come out of Chicago. The ones that your listeners may have heard of are The Battle Cry of Freedom and Marching Through Georgia. Those are two phenomenally popular Civil War songs in the North, both products of one Chicago music store and publisher called Root and Katie, who are really fascinating. And so you fast forward to the 20th century, and Chicago is still a center for American music. And what happens in Chicago in the 20th century is, you mentioned the Great Migration. You get this huge number of African Americans migrate to Chicago from the Deep South, and they bring their music with them. And Chicago becomes a major recording center for the emerging genres of jazz and blues. And so for the first time, this becomes one of the main places where this happens, where these styles of music that had previously, because of segregation, really hadn't been available to a lot of people to hear outside of where they were being directly performed, suddenly they're being recorded on albums and they're sold. And this influences music around the world. And Chicago is kind of an epicenter for this.
Yeah. And I mean, the civil rights movement, you have Mahalia Jackson. We're going to hear a song from her in just a moment here. Can you talk about the sort of the nexus of Chicago as we then come into today, right? From the civil rights era through today.
Sure. Yeah. These traditions continue in Chicago and in Illinois in general. And there's just a very vibrant music scene here in Illinois. And that's part of what the exhibit, tries to highlight. So, you know, the exhibit's called State of Sound, and it's organized by genre. And partly the decision to organize it by genres was to show how Illinois has this enormous number of styles of music coming out. A huge number of very influential artists, and a lot of them and a lot of these musical styles and a lot of these artists are products of diversity, that there's all these different kinds of people coming into Illinois from different places, of course Chicago more than other places because it's so big, but it's resulting in all these different really fascinating styles of music. And that's still true today. Chicago is still and Illinois is still a center for American music and producing multiple genres at once.
All right. In just about 3 minutes we have remaining, I want to pivot. There is a copy of the Emancipation Proclamation, I understand. It's only on display for another week. This is one of those documents that you see it limited if you're lucky enough to happen to catch it here. Can you talk about, there's an interesting backstory to this particular version of that document. Can you share that with us?
Sure. So we have a couple of documents that we try to put out every year, but we put them out for a limited amount of time because you kind of have to take care of these documents. And so the Gettysburg Address is one. We put that out around the anniversary of the actual delivery of the Gettysburg Address on November 19th. The Emancipation Proclamation we put out around Juneteenth. It is on display until July 6th. The next day, on July 7th, by the way, the letter that I told you was donated today, that's when it will go on display. And the thing about the Emancipation Proclamation, without getting into the history of emancipation itself, which is, I think we don't have time for, but the actual Emancipation Proclamation that Lincoln signed that day was lost in the Chicago fire, speaking of Chicago. And so we don't have that anymore. But what we do have is Lincoln and his Secretary of State, William Seward, signed 48 printed copies of the Emancipation Proclamation, which were then sold to benefit soldiers. And then, you know, those went out into the world, right? And so some of them, you know, they all have lives of their own, which is another interesting thing about working in a place like this, that, like, it's not just what the objects tell us about history. They have their own histories, right? And so 27 of those 48 copies are known to exist. We know where they are in the world, and we have one of them. And so when you come here, that's what you'll see. It is a printed copy of the Emancipation Proclamation, but it is signed by Abraham Lincoln and William Seward. Just a really remarkable thing to kind of just stand there and be in the presence of.
All right. Christian McWhorter is a Lincoln historian at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, from where we are broadcasting live today. Stay with us. In just a moment, we're going to be taking a tour of the State of Sound exhibit here at the museum. Thank you to Christian McWhorter for being with us. The great Chicago gospel and civil rights singer Mahalia Jackson is going to play us off. This is the 21st. More to come. Stay with us.